So, welcome to the show. This is going out on Mintwave Radio. You can just ask Alexa, or you can go to KarenRobertsCoaching.com/Mintwave-radio, listen in and see the rest of our schedule. Or if you're on podcasts, again, KarenRobertsCoaching.com/podcast-network. Podcast-network to see my one and any of the other shows that are in our network. You can download the app from Apple or Android, and please subscribe to any that take your fancy, or follow or leave a comment. Now, today's episode is 114, and today we have the lovely Laura. She's a health and life coach and personal trainer, so a bit of all in. And we're going to be talking about how to claim your confidence. My name's Karen Roberts. I'm your host. We provide a platform for coaches, consultants, therapists and healers to get their message heard by the people that need to hear it. So as owners of Mintwave Radio Station and the Raising Vibrations podcast network on Podbean, we also have a directory, so come and find us and find the right coach, the right therapist for you that you need right now. If you'd like to be featured, then also get in touch. So Laura works as a speaker, a certified personal trainer, nutrition specialist, behavior change specialist, and she's a certified health and life coach. For the last decade, her mission has been to help people build a bridge from where they are to where they want to be. Now, today's culture leaves people seeking worthiness from their external world, and Laura simplifies neuroplasticity to make it a usable tool to anyone who is ready to heal the unhealthy relationships they have in their life, whether that's food, movement, communication, time, or in fact themselves. It's always ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Laura, her passion radiates. So whether that's with her personal clients or from the stage, she empowers her people to find their inner power in order to become the best version of themselves. So welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Karen. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. And if you'd like to share, so that's a little bit of a background of you, but if you'd like to share with the audience a little bit more about your story and how did you come to be doing what you're doing right now?
You bet. Every time I hear, you know, my history, I'm like, there's so many titles, and it's because I love learning, which was something I actually discovered later in my life. But when I was a kid, I was an obese kid. I was also very athletic. So I grew up with kind of the obese kid mind, always believing I was fat, and kind of even into my adult life as a trainer, when I was fit, had the fat mindset I was stuck in. Plus, through my athletics, I broke 9 bones because I was a very physical athlete. So when it came to choosing a career, I lean toward personal training because I wanted to be able to, you know, protect my body and learn how to manage the different injuries as I aged. I wanted to be able to lose weight, get rid of all that, you know, obesity from childhood. And I love helping people. And I boycotted nutrition for like technically like 25 years, but like 5 years within my career. And then I realized like I wasn't helping people to the depths that I could because of my own, you know, resistance. So I got my nutrition certification, and that really skyrocketed my career because I was very successful at helping people lose weight. There's literally one person ever that I haven't been able to help lose weight. But it was more of a diet, as in they could stick to the habits they committed to, eating certain ways. And it was kind of like nutrition coaching. So that's technically when I started coaching, but they would rebound. They would be okay. I lost 10, 20, 30 pounds, whatever they wanted, but it was all willpower. It wasn't mindset, true change. And that's what really got me interested in becoming a health and life coach, was I personally know how hard it is to lose weight and keep it off, and just to lose it in general and then gain it back. That is like, it just hit me, and I wanted to stop having that be my experience with people. And that's when I started to become a health and life coach and behavior change specialist, because that's what I wanted to, that was a service I really wanted to give, was sustainable life change, not just like a quick fix. And it's been a very intriguing journey, one I could have never predicted that I would go down with the ups and downs of my own experience. But I'm also eternally grateful for every hill, every struggle, because I've learned so much about myself and so much about how to help people. And yeah, it's pretty extraordinary.
Awesome. And I love that you're doing everything together. And it is interesting that you sort of come to that. You've done bit by bit by bit and put it all in together. And I can totally relate. I was slightly bigger. Yeah. I did ballet, believe it or not, from when I was three. I wanted to go to dancing school. I passed the audition and failed my physical because they said at the time, I don't think they could say that now, that I was too big to get work if I'd gone to dancing school. Hindsight, I'm glad I didn't go, to be fair. I did always struggle with my weight. And then I went into fitness. And again, I was, you know, I wasn't worried about my weight when I was teaching because I was fit and I was strong. But I was never going to be skinny. That's just not my body shape anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when it was fitness, I would have, you know, fought with people to say that, you know, it's to do with exercise, not exercising enough. And so I can totally understand what you were saying there about resisting the nutrition part. And, you know, it's 85% nutrition and about 15%.
God. But, you know, I would argue that it's 100% mindset, because that's what controls nutrition and
100%.
And
100%. But isn't that with everything? Isn't that with everything? It all starts with mindset.
Mm-hmm. It really does. And that was something I'm so grateful I learned, like, when I'm young, because I have clients who are in their 50s or 60s who consistently tell me, do you know how lucky you are that you figured this out young? And my answer is yes. But no, I'll never know, because I was never on the other side where I spent, you know, 50, 60 years suffering, not realizing, you know, there was a better way. But just from the suffering I experienced, it's, you get your life back.
Well, Laura, and I'd think that, you know, I should be like that. But, you know, I'm going to admit, lockdown, I regain weight because I'm an emotional eater. I know, and I'm aware of that. And I still, with all the knowledge, with all the, I still did it to myself. I still hit that self-sabotage button. Why?
Why? Because you're likely unfamiliar or unfriendly with your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically, as a former emotional eater, I used to do the same thing. They're uncomfortable. I don't really like them. But they're purposeful, and I needed to learn to respect them. And if you think about, like, not to get nerdy, but like where emotional, like the amygdala, which ultimately controls our emotions, where it's located in the brain, it's located in near our limbic system, which is technically referred to as our motivational triad, as in that's what motivates us or not. So emotions are intended to motivate us, but we aren't in depth about knowing how to decode them and how to process them. And so we're like, okay, we understand this is why I feel it. This is the feeling, and I'm feeling the feeling. That's great. Mm. Where's the motivation? And the motivation comes in actually the next step, which a lot of people don't do, which is taking, like, breaking it down to get the motivational action. So for example, let's do fear. People, they face fear every day. This is, I always teach it to my clients like this. How would you describe it to a five-year-old? A five-year-old's telling you all these things. You're like, oh, that's fear. This is what arises in you when something you care about. And then I make them finish a sentence. So for me, this is what arises in you when something you care about feels unsafe. So given the circumstance of what I'm feeling that's fearful, what is it that I'm caring about? Why does it feel unsafe? And now, anytime we feel those emotions, we can't ever feel safe. We can feel safer, but not completely safe. The whole reason we're feeling the emotion is because we don't feel safe. So then I come up with a list of all the different things that I can do to feel safer. And every time that fear pops back up, that's a cue for me to be motivated to take said action. And then I'm not stuck in that uncomfortable energy, which ultimately was what made me want to go and eat.
Ah, and I love that. So really what I heard from all of that, by saying safer, it's less of a, you know, if you say safe and then that negative voice says, no, you're not.
Right.
By isn't it interesting that just a slight flip of the verbiage that we use is massive? Because just switching from safe, which is a statement, which is allowing our ego, I suppose, to argue. I'm sure I've got quite a strong ego there. I can argue. It'll argue the point. Whereas just saying safer is like, ah, it's a different energy, isn't it? It's like allowing space to go safer. Well, yeah, actually, because it makes so much sense when you put it like, I've never heard it put like that before. Yeah. And it's funny. I know I'm an emotional eater. It's all dropped off now. You know, we're out of lockdown and I'm not so miserable. Yeah. But, I found my happy place.
Even better. And when we're happy, we don't feel the need to emotionally eat, right? But I went to therapy for years trying to figure out, and, you know, I was armed with a lot of tools. I understood myself better. I'm not dissing therapy. Obviously, therapy is very, very impactful and useful. But for me, I was like, okay, I understand this is what I feel. This is why I feel it. These are the coping tools I can use to soothe myself. And I would do it, but I was still stuck in the energy and it didn't feel purposeful. It didn't feel valuable. It didn't feel like I was going to learn or grow from it. It just felt like I was hurting from it. With that next step of understanding what you need to do to feel safer, you actually have some personal stake in your ability to feel safer. And, you know, I do speaking and I hate public speaking. I do it because the message I want to spread is way bigger than me or my insecurities, but I don't like being the center of attention. So anytime I'm doing a speaking gig, I get scared. And every time that fear pops up, it's a reminder for me to practice my speech, because the more familiar I am with whatever my talk is, the more confident I feel. So I'll practice it. I feel good. And then a couple hours go by and it's like, yeah, but you're going to be in front of a bunch of people. And I'm like, right, I need to practice it again. And it just kind of continues to cue me and motivate me to take action to support myself. And turns out when I actually go to food, it feels dissatisfying because I've seen the other side, like, well, this is actually useful and easier. And like, I want to be productive. So it's definitely a process, but it's impactful.
Yeah. Well, we've all got programming, haven't we? So it's just that default setting up till that point has meant that trigger means go to the fridge or whatever is your go-to, whether it's ice cream, whether it's crisps, whether it's chip, whatever your go-to for that instant gratification, that instant bit of, I want to feel good.
Yeah.
And when you can offer up another way, which challenges that thing. But again, I suppose it's not going to happen overnight, is it? It's going to be something that you've got to practice consciously until it becomes a new habit.
Yeah, like any habit, we have to practice, right? And, you know, if from the emotional eaters I've worked with, a lot of them have the awareness, they're feeling the emotion. And because we do all have that conditioning you were referencing, we grew up in a culture that kind of told us emotions are weak or bad. Well, some, not all, but like we all know the line where like these are the acceptable ones and these are the unacceptable ones. But as feeling-based people, that's not really how it works. We don't get to just say, okay, we're only going to feel these. And when we try to do that, we actually numb ourselves to the entire spectrum without completely recognizing it. So it is starting with like the awareness, this is what I'm feeling and it's uncomfortable. But the gift, yes, I use the word gift, of the discomfort is it grabs your attention so you can get the motivational action. So
right.
our tendency is, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable. I don't like that. And like, I'm going to go put food in my mouth or do whatever, you know, your tendency is to try and escape feeling that way. Instead, I encourage my clients to recognize the discomfort as a cue for them to support themselves by decoding the message and getting the motivational action.
Right. So you're really, it sounds like you're trying to get people to be aware, be conscious so that they can make a decision rather than it being a habitual pattern without, because we're not really thinking. And that seems to be the thing. We're just doing this on autopilot because we don't want the result it's going to give us, do we? I don't want to be straining in my jeans. I want to be able to put that dress on this weekend. And because I find it such a fascinating subject because outside of looking in, it's crazy, our actions and our response, isn't it? It's hang on a minute. You don't want to do that because you're not going to want the result that that's going to give you. So why are you doing it? Why are we doing some of the things that we do when we don't want the end result? It's phenomenal, but it just goes to show how much programming, how much conditioning in our heads is actually impacting our lives. Some of it we realize, and other times we don't until we have somebody like yourself making us aware.
Yeah.
Right? Awareness is step one.
Awareness is absolutely, you can't do anything unless you're aware. You really can't. Yeah. Like, so our brain is really, really, really good at protecting us, even from ourselves. And the result we want, to look good in that, you know, sexy little dress, if that has any action that could be a potential threat to our brain, we're not going to look so good in that dress, because safety is our primitive number one need in all three of our brain systems. So it will trump everything. And, you know, here's a perfect example. And I know so many people experience this one. I had a client who was sabotaging herself because she's single and she blames her body for not having a boyfriend. Okay. So I asked her, how is keeping her body this size helping protect her? And she took a moment before she just broke down into tears. And I was like, you have the answer? She's like, yeah, because if I have the perfect body and guys still don't want me, then they don't want me, as in like who I am. And that hurts way more than douchebags blaming me for my body. And I'm like, that's how you're protecting yourself. And like, but we don't think like that. She would have never, ever asked herself, how am I trying to stay this size to protect myself? But as soon as we can see it as a protective mechanism, not a something wrong with us or a problem, it puts us more into acceptance, which is the healing phase of our journey.
Wow. And isn't that interesting? Like you just said there, it's if nobody had asked the question, she would have just gone, oh, it's because of that.
Right.
So all this stuff that we're doing in all aspects of life, I suppose, until we actually stop, nobody's asked that question, or we haven't asked ourselves that question. And isn't that funny? We know the answer. So what I've just heard from you is you didn't tell her that. She realized it was a self-realization. All she needed to be done is pointed. So you just pointed her from what you've shared. You pointed her in the right direction, and she's had that realization herself. And I suppose I would have thought that half the time, I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, it's more of a process, but I would have thought when you have some kind of that, you know, understanding, that could be it. Because when you've brought that up to the light of day and looked at it and gone, really? Is that why I've been doing that? That might be enough to actually cause the shift, or does it take a lot more?
It depends on the person and the degree of fear, comfort, stress they're in. Because the reality is and many women who sabotage their body to protect themselves in that type of way, they're protecting themselves. That's still the key part. Like, just because you have the awareness, it makes you recognize the tendency and the patterns differently, but that doesn't mean you feel safe all of a sudden. So then it becomes a journey of teaching your brain how to feel safe through change. And that is a very uncomfortable, purposeful, totally transformative, worthwhile, but uncomfortable process.
And do you find that quite often people are actually resisting the change, no matter what it is?
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing. That's the thing. None of us want change. We want to we want the end result. We just want to keep doing the same thing.
Why do you think we keep trying to change other people? It's easier to try and change them to change ourselves.
Because that takes effort, doesn't it? It takes conscious, consistent effort until it's become a habit. And it's almost like it's obviously all subconscious. We don't do it deliberately. Ideally, I'd like to get the job done in a few weeks, right? But there's almost like this certain timeline. If you can do it for long enough, you'll get there. And I think sometimes I must have a week, I don't know if it's weak willpower. In some things, I've got so much willpower.
Well, it's mindset.
It is, isn't it? It's mindset. Yeah. I think, I don't believe when people say it takes 3 weeks to create a new habit, I think it takes a lot longer than that. Because I would say I've got probably willpower for 2.
Yeah.
Which means there's a gap.
Yeah.
Mind the gap.
There's a lot of conflicting research. I think like 21 days just sounds nice, and that's why people tend to stick with it. But a lot of habit researchers can say can take up to a year. It really depends how hooked your psychology is in that thing and how deeply protected you're trying to be with yourself through that kind of outlet. So for example, like an emotional eater, right? So I caught myself self-sabotaging. I had 5 big life events happen all within like the same 6-month time period. And they were all new experiences. I started a business. I got into being a behavior change specialist, moved across country. The pandemic was a thing. And I purchased my first home. It was a lot. And all of a sudden, I found myself indulging in some chocolate macadamia nut turtles that were delicious. And 2 weeks later, I look in the mirror and I'm like, what's going on? And I ask myself the very same question, how am I trying to protect myself by eating right now? And the answer was that body shame is a familiar stressed out state for me. I've experienced that for decades because I was an obese kid. All those other states of stress, new house, new business, that was unfamiliar. I didn't know if that's survivable, which is how our brain thinks about it. So what my brain did is cause me to take action to put me in a different stressed out state that I knew I could manage and survive. And as soon as I realized that, I'm like, I'm stressing out too much. And stress for a lot of people is a huge way that they try to disguise some of their issues and try to protect themselves.
Oh, I can believe that 100%. I mean, I used to just try and justify things to myself. You know, I've worked really hard. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go and get a bottle of Prosecco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, trying to sort of justify it in my own head that why I should be able to self-indulge, which again, having a bottle of Prosecco, it's not going to be helping me. I'm not going to want the end result. I'm going to wake up feeling a bit sluggish. You know, why? But it's just, I find it such a phenomenal subject matter, because you just think to yourself, you know, as a mother, you look at your kids doing things and try and rationalize everything. But and then it's yourself doing it. Yeah. You're like, why am I doing that? It's just, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I always say, if you leave it up to yourself to like win or lose over justification, you're arguing with what you want and you're the one who's wanting it. So it's you wanting it versus you wanting it and you're having the disagreement. So you're going to end up likely getting it.
And I'm going
to win. It's very simple, but that thought is what will cause whatever the like underlying thing is for different people. Like that client was protecting herself from men not liking who she was versus not liking her body. When she would justify things like that, she got a good grade on a test or she got a promotion, whatever it would be, she would have a little treat. I did good. Look at me, a little treat. And that's top three ways that we sabotage ourselves, all because we don't see the underlying thing. And it's not always just, you know, we want it, because I still eat sweets. I'm not crazy. Sugar tastes delicious still. But because I don't deprive myself of it, I've healed the relationship I have with it, and I can have it in moderation, which I never used to be able to do. And I actually can still lose weight while I balance it out. It's very transformative when you can recognize and accept that it's your mindset and stress are the top two things that actually affect your physical and mental health, and that the nutrition and the fitness are kind of the brother and sister of stress and mindset. Because if you don't get those two under control, you can work out all you want, you can try and perfect your diet, but it's willpower and it doesn't stick.
Yeah. Well, I know that's definitely true for me. And like I say, now I'm back happy. I feel like I'm back to my old self. And as long as they don't have any more lockdowns, then I might dip back in. And it is, it's just amazing. It's like, really, what has actually changed? Nothing else has changed around other than the fact that I'm feeling good. I'm back being happy. Yes, I'm probably focusing on mindset a bit more and making sure I do take time on self-care and to relax and to meditate. And like you said, stress. I mean, well, how many people are living in a constant state of stress, which is not good for their health, not good for their bodies? I mean, you're not going to, like you say, you don't want to do anything. I don't want to work out when I'm stressed.
No, and that's the worthiness thing. There is so much of our worth that we outsource, and stress is the culprit. Because similar to kind of growing up in a culture that said, you know, these emotions were okay and these emotions weren't, we also have learned some type of conditioning that if you're successful, if you're productive, if you're busy — busy is like a buzzword. How many times do you hear friends be like, I can't, I'm too busy? And it's like, it makes people feel like they're doing enough in the world. And this is literally sourced from the fact that, like, that we aren't taught one key thing, I think. We grow up and our parents do their best job with us, and regardless of the perfect parents, they're all going to screw us up a little bit because it's an undeveloped childhood mind. It's impossible not to screw us up. And then we become the adults that need to parent ourselves to figure the rest out. But we're not told that. So we're always guessing, should I be doing this? Is this enough? I don't know. And these are the thoughts we have. It's, oh, I should clean my — I can't tell you how many of my clients complain about the fact that they can't clean their house, and they judge themselves and they shame themselves. I'm like, who cares? Like, I like a clean house too. I'm not the cleanest person, so I find a way to make it work. I have a dance party and I clean at the same time. I chase my dogs and I clean at the same time. I clean for 10 minutes, a little bit here, a little bit there. And when I made enough money, I paid for someone to come and clean my house, because I know it just doesn't make me happy. But if it's something that's important to us, we do it. That's just the reality. And we look at what we claim the most worth from as the most important, like work and also money, because those are things that, you know, people who believe in status are drawn towards. And we suffer because of it.
Too much pressure. It's pressure that we put on ourselves. Because, do you have to have a show home? No. my house looks very lived in.
Yeah.
Because it's not a priority. Like you know, for me, it's not a priority. Get a cleaner in. Right. I'm not going to spend my free time that I have, right, spending it on doing that. And, you know, it can wait till tomorrow. Right. But there are so many women that put, you know, everything's got to be perfect. And then, yeah, that's going to be just adding to the stress. That's surely not going to be good for your health long term, is it?
Well, no. And funny enough, that as a previous perfectionist, that's a glowing shield of our stress response. If I'm perfect, I can't get hurt. If I'm perfect, they won't think I'm less than. If I'm perfect, nothing bad can happen. And that's really why we operate like that. So people who are like, we are what we experience. A lot of people will say, you know, they need that show home and cleanliness because it makes them feel better. And then that might be true because I like a clean house too. But when it's imperfect and still clean, if they're still bothered by it, then it's not about clean. It's about perfect. And what they think others will think of them based on what they think of people who don't have clean houses and how they judge themselves for not having it. You know?
Ah, there it is.
That's it. So like, this was the key to me to becoming confident was changing your relationship with you. And it goes beyond self-care and how I think of it. You know, I grew up around a lot of loving and supportive people, but they were judgmental. And I very much knew like this was okay and this was not okay. And I loathe judgment. I don't do it. I don't understand what value it holds in my life. It doesn't make sense to me. Who am I to judge another person? I assess myself and I try to grow from it, but different strokes for different folks. So judgment doesn't make sense to me. But I didn't grow up like that. I grew up extremely judgmental of myself. And then going through coaching and kind of the process of my career, I realized like I don't have to judge people or myself. And I was able to let it go. And it's wild because before I did that, I spent countless hours of energy worrying, stressing about what others would think of me and the judgment they would place on me. And the moment I decided to stop judging myself, I didn't think others judged me either. And I'm sure some people do. And if they do, that's okay. I don't know about it. I'm not asking like, hey, Karen, what judgments do you have about me? And even if you're not going to be honest with me about it. So what point is it? And that's, you know, just an example, but however we end up treating ourselves, we imagine others would treat us the same way and think of us the same way. So if we want to heal, we have to heal how we think of ourselves. And that confidence.
That perfect. Absolutely perfect. And there you go. It's you've got to do to yourself. So it's not about, it's about, and that's considered in some, for some people's perception as being selfish.
Uh-huh. It is.
But actually it's the one thing that we've got to do. We've got to start here.
Yeah. And it's funny because the people who consider it selfish are either too afraid to look at themselves or benefit from people doing things for them and want them to think it's selfish of them to think of themselves because then they don't get the thing.
Yeah.
It's really,
yeah. It's such a fascinating subject. I mean, us human beings, we're a funny really bunch, cool, aren't we?
we're really messed up in the most interesting, twisted, complicated, beautiful way.
And beautiful. Absolutely.
Like
we're imperfectly perfect. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. With all our different quirkiness and wackiness, and we're all different. And rather than everybody trying to fit in the one box, man, there's no room in that box. Get out the box. Find your own box.
There would be no innovation if we all were in the same box. There would be no creation. Like, we can't all be a cookie cutter. But if you think about where it comes from what's right. Like, when we're kids, we learn from our parents, like, behave this way, you get treats and love. Behave this way, you get a talking to and going to your room. Mm. Like, we get conditioned, this is okay and this isn't okay. And we're still trying to figure that out, but we no longer have the parents to tell us this is what's okay and this isn't. So that's where, like, healing the relationship with yourself allows you to intentionally and mindfully be that guide of what's right for you, keyword for you, and what's not right for you. Because what's right for you and what's right for me are going to be totally different things. Doesn't make one good or bad or better or worse. It just makes them different. And that is humanity. We are meant to be uniquely different.
Oh, love that. That's just so well said. And that is it. It's just let's all just accept what is.
Yeah.
Accept as is and accept all our beautiful differences. So what challenges stop people? They talk about being confident, you know, if people aren't feeling confident, what challenges are stopping them?
Fear, stress, and comfort.
Could you explain?
Sure. I'll go backwards. So, you know, we misunderstand our comfort zone. If you think about it, I could call our comfort zone our experience zone and our discomfort zone our inexperienced zone. And that's really the same thing. But when we feel comfortable, not only like neurochemically is that what our brain is predisposed towards, like it likes to automate anything and everything it can. And when we try to change, we feel uncomfortable. And since we have this really messed up relationship with discomfort, we then run away and try to escape it. When really discomfort is the energy of growth and learning to respect it and sit with it and talk to your mind about what's happening to create that in your experience zone. You've got to brave the discomfort to bring it into your experience zone, but we're so afraid of the uncomfortable that we don't do that.
Mad. I mean, I get it. It's a survive. It was a survival instinct, keeping us safe, maybe, you know, millions of years ago.
It was, but now, like, if you're
being attacked by a lion,
if you're being attacked by a lion or a bear, listen to your discomfort, like, trust that. But a lot of these issues are psychological. Like, I don't want to be uncomfortable in sadness. So I'm going to eat pizza instead of sitting through the discomfort of allowing that to kind of go through me. Or, you know, stress addiction, since stress is one of the other ones, we literally get addicted to it. So like from a hormonal state, our body automates everything and we get to a state of like homeostasis. And that's based on the level of stress you have in your life. You get a level of cortisol that your body regulates to. When you want to change that, there is another hormone that I cannot pronounce, but it is the abbreviation is CRH that releases, trying to get you back to stress. And what it does is it makes you feel this really uncomfortable feeling. Like when I felt it, it was like this creepy, crawly, itchy. And I felt like this gravitational force trying to pull me back to work. And then it makes you feel uncomfortable or think uncomfortable thoughts. Like, you're not doing enough. What's wrong with you? People are going to judge you, all with the intention of trying to prompt a regulatory action to get back to the stress addiction it once knew. That's what our brain does, is it tries to keep us regulated. Wow. So knowing that discomfort is the experience of change and talking to yourself, like, I know this is what my brain's doing. I can brave this discomfort. I'm safe. There's no lion or bear here. This is going to create experience for me to know it's okay for me to not be addicted to stress. It's okay for me to feel like there's enough time. That's how we really have to change our psychology. So that's the comfort crisis along with the stress addiction. And the stress addiction completely connects to our sense of worth and how we measure that. And if you're not sure if that kind of is you, if you have thoughts like, is that enough or I'm not enough, then you definitely are targeted by your sense of worth. Because let me ask you, Karen, what human do you think is born to not be worthy enough?
None.
So when
Doesn't
did that
exist.
happen that all of a sudden we're not worthy?
Yeah.
It's
And it
fictitious.
seems to be a massive thing. Ah, totally. Totally an untruth. And I suppose it doesn't have to have come from somebody that's really specifically tried to make them feel unworthy. It could come from just really minor incidences that have happened throughout life. I mean, it is quite, and because I know I've, and I would always have thought, oh, no, I'm a confident person, da, 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 da. But as I've got older, yes, I realize that, actually, that's coming from, yeah, being on what things that were, again, subconscious, because I would have said consciously, no chance, I don't feel like that. But yeah, they would have been. I mean, I was adopted as a baby, so, and I would have said consciously, that doesn't affect me. I'm fine. But actually, there's a
Listen,
little bit more going on.
I love adoption, and like my husband and I totally plan on doing that at some point, but from what I've researched and spoken to with clients all together, it's impossible for something like that not to have some degree of impact on you, because that's when the like priming of your conditioning is, and it could be nothing to do with you. You could have done, like, God forbid your parents, died in a fire, and like that's why you were adopted. Doesn't mean, something's wrong with you, but that doesn't also mean you won't have thoughts or feelings or beliefs about yourself because that was your experience. And we all have some degree of them. Like my thing was, I did not feel like I was enough. I did not feel worthy. And I was a people pleaser. That was my defense mechanism. If I made other people happy, I was safe. And I do like helping people. So like that was like, oh, I get positivity. But then there was this line that I didn't know. And when I'd cross it, it was like the deepest cost and self-sabotage to myself. So much so that when I was trying to please everyone when planning my own wedding, I started having suicidal ideation. And that's really
Wow.
what like sparked my whole coaching journey, was I was like, okay, these thoughts aren't okay. And I went to a therapist who pretty much told me I was coaching myself during our sessions. I didn't even know coaching was a profession yet. And she suggested I look into coaching. It clicked with
Wow.
me, and that's really how I've learned to claim my worth, by getting to know who I am, not how others perceive me,
Oh, totally, totally. But I think that's what how most coaches do say it's all about their healing journey. And I probably do have to go back and do a little bit of healing. Part of this, even sort of, it's almost like I'm making a point. I've got being, that could be all part of that, abandonment issues. I was always a little bit of a spontaneous, I would run away, run away, run away. That was my go-to sort of mechanism. It's just whereas consciously, and I said no, I've not done it because of that. But it's amazing how we are responding to past triggers or past factors. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I didn't know we were going to talk about this today. Absolutely fascinating. I knew you were a personal trainer. I knew it was more fitness, but wow, this isn't just that. I mean, you're covering all aspects here. And from what it sounds like is, this is to solve the problem once and for all so that you don't go back and repeat how many people have been on diets in there.
And I like
Again and
that
again and
is
again.
this is my definition of health, where you are mentally, physically, spiritually healthy within yourself, and you get to authentically confidently decide what role fitness plays in your life, what role nutrition plays in your life, what body image you're comfortable with, and what body image empowers you regardless of what society says or tells you it needs to be. Like, every human is supposed to be different. So why are we judging ourselves for being different?
Yes. Crazy, isn't it?
It really is.
I mean, I think sometimes I go out and I think, you're all these young girls, I think you're all trying to look like the same person. You're all going for the, I don't know, the a Kardashian look. It's all like the same look. I think that's why I'm just such a rebel. It's like, no, yeah. I'm not fitting in with that thing. That's not going to be me. No. But it's, so it's amazing. Oh, what is it that triggers us to just, I suppose it's just life, is it? It's just part of life. And then it's our journey to try and figure it out. I don't know why we all think we're going to have it all together and all solved just because we're an adult.
Oh, like, I love those like reels on Instagram you roll across that it's like, when I was in high school and used to look to adults, be like, when I'm that age, I'm going to know what I'm doing. Nope, you're still making it up. And like, that's the point. But how you make it up, if you're making it up to fit in, to be a cookie cutter, or if you're fitting it up from, or I'm sorry, if you're figuring it out from a space of like belonging and authenticity, apparently I can't talk anymore, then screw up if you need to. As long as you belong and you're authentic, you don't have anything to lose. When you're fitting in and you're being fake, you have something to lose. It's a different journey.
I think it gets easier with age. Definitely gets it. I mean, I'm gonna be 51 this year, and I'm still learning.
Yeah,
like you, I you know, I've got this thirst for knowledge. You know, this arena is I find absolutely fascinating. Have I got it all figured out? Parts of it, maybe. Other parts, absolutely not. It's still a work in progress. Well, and it will always be.
The world is changing. You are changing. Your hormones are changing. Your body is changing. We're not meant, like, whatever you had figured out at 30 changed by this point. So you're not supposed to have it figured out. What you're supposed to, ideally, I think, figure out is you. Right?
Getting there. I'd say. Getting there. Well, working on it.
Along the way, because we keep changing. So we have to keep figuring ourselves out.
It's an ongoing journey. So for those who are listening, if they're like, okay, you know, I think I could do with some help here. Laura, how do they find you, first of all?
The easiest two places are on Facebook in my group, Being Healthy. Or you can go to my website, Change by Challenge, because I believe if it doesn't challenge you, it's probably not going to change you. And I'm going for the true change impact here. So Change by Challenge.
Love that. Yeah. So rather than if you're sick and tired of constantly being on a diet, and especially, you know, I'm sure all the New Year's resolutions probably have already ended because they haven't stuck to it. Mm-hmm. The gyms will be back empty again now. So, and you'd rather like to get it dealt with once and for all. Get in touch with Laura. I love the fact that you really are combining not just the fitness, the nutrition, but more about the behavioral, understanding yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is it. You know, we all need a holistic approach to everything. Like you say, when we, you know, mental, physical, spiritual, when it's all in balance. Like I say, for me now, I'm like, why was I even eating that rubbish that I wasn't even really liking? I'd much actually prefer a healthier, mm-hmm. I actually enjoy it more, but somehow there's some kind of programming mucked up there that it's a treat to have pizza, and you get it and you think, ugh.
Uh-huh.
You know, what is it? It's just an amazing thing that we do to ourselves and justify it. myself. You know, I want this because, you know, I am going to love it. Actually, no, it tastes like crap.
Right. Yeah. No, we definitely do that. It's an interesting ongoing journey, and you got to keep your eye on the ball. But I always encourage people, like, if you really, instead of asking why with judgment, ask, okay, how is it protecting me to do this thing? And give it time and see what your brain tells you, because like you acknowledge, like, there's a lot going on subconsciously we aren't consciously aware of that drive these behaviors. If you can identify how it's protecting you, even with that information, that's going to make you think differently about it and ultimately change your actions.
Right. So it is all about trying to bring the subconscious things conscious so that you can look at it and go, man, have I been doing that because of that? Really? Right. Psh, don't need that anymore. But if you don't know, you don't know. We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. I always like to say the subconscious can run you, or you can learn to befriend the subconscious and run all of you. Like we try to avoid things that make us uncomfortable. So then we're controlled by them. But if we learn to address them, we control all within ourselves. And like, that is a very impressive state of confidence for sure.
Yeah. And that's very empowering. It just goes to show that again, we always want to put, you know, and I'll admit, could very easy to blame outside external forces for this. Oh, it's because of lockdown. It's because of this. It's because my boyfriend dumped me. It's because of this.
You know what I heard one time about blame that I really liked? Blame is our attempt to discharge uncomfortable emotions.
Blame is our
attempt to discharge it's the pandemic's fault. I'm doing the best I can because of it. But I totally did that.
Yeah, it was me.
And you take responsibility, you also have the power to do anything about it.
Which is what we want. Otherwise, you know, I'm the victim. I'm at the mercy of what my government decide what we're going to do in the next pandemic, rather than owning it. It's just funny how it's almost this auto response to want to blame an outside when it starts within, it starts with me, and it ends with me. I mean, it's me. Yeah. I'm in my own way. It's my fault. I put on my. I didn't need to do it.
If we do that, like I did the same thing, and I remember I said to my husband once, you know, we got in a disagreement, and I was like, "No, I'm not. I don't like how you treated me, but it's my fault that I dissociated. Like, yes, you created circumstances that made me feel unsafe emotionally, and I withdrew out of a previous protective mechanism. You didn't push a button and say dissociate. Like that wasn't your doing. I can't expect you to take responsibility for something you didn't know you could do or you could affect. I don't like how you treated me, but I need a better awareness of when I do that so I don't leave our relationship emotionally. And it was the first time I took like radical personal responsibility. And after that conversation, I was like, fuck yeah. Like I felt so powerful because I realized like I can change it.
And I bet that's helped your relationship. Uh-huh. So this isn't just about food and body image or anything. This is everything together because how it's going to make you at the end of the day, it's what we all want is to feel good or feel better. Like you said, safer, better. We want to feel better than we did yesterday.
Exactly. Exactly. Great on the adjustment of the word. Totally agree.
Yeah. It's so amazing how just a simple switch of a word can totally change things in our subconscious. Like we don't even know this consciously. Like we think we're in control. Give over, love. Not a chance. And actually good job too, because I'd forget to breathe, I'd forget to pump my heart. I mean, thank goodness.
Thank God. Can you imagine having to think every breath, every blink? We could do anything.
We'd be gone. I'd be gone within. Oh, I forgot to breathe. Can you imagine it? So thank, you know, I don't know why we don't trust that energy that is running the show a little bit more rather than getting in our own way and blaming everybody else.
Yeah.
We're funny creatures, aren't we? If there are aliens looking in, they must be like, what are that lot doing? Well, they're a funny bunch.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, well, I've got to say thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation today. I've learned loads, even about myself too. I sort of, you know, I knew it was, a few things going on. But, yeah, absolutely fascinating, the subject of us. Really, you're studying yourself. That's what it's all about. Wouldn't we all want to understand why we sometimes do the things we do, and why are we not doing other things to actually have a better, more fulfilling life? Because that's what it's down to at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said in the beginning, never could have seen my path go the way it went, but I'm eternally grateful for it. And the clarity and the confidence and the intuition that goes with it, you know, it's really phenomenal. And thank you for even giving me the platform to share my message and try to help people kind of find that true embodiment of health, because we get one life to live. And, you know, I suffered for 30 years and I don't want to spend a single day suffering like that anymore. And I hope that our conversation can help people break that cycle too.
Brilliant. I'm sure it will. I mean, I've learned a lot from that. I'm sure the listeners would have. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And to everybody else, well, I will be back on Monday with a Coffee with Karen. So bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.